Pour yourself a cold one.
Let's drink them, huh?
And listen to Russ Tucker and Philadelphia Eagles film junkie Fran Duffy break down the top college prospects on another tasty edition of The College Draft.
Yeah, it is Daddy Soda time. It's always Daddy Soda time, let's be honest. But it's especially Daddy Soda time when it's hot in the summer and we're getting ready for football. Praise the Lord. Hallelujah. To start up again. And we are starting up with looking at some of the top prospects by really looking at the traits at each position in college football and how it translates to the NFL. We will be joined today by Greg McElroy. He was a stud at Alabama, national championship quarterback, got drafted by the Jets, played in the NFL for a while, and we will be breaking down the quarterback position, which is kind of important. I don't know if you've heard or not. By we, of course, I mean he, primarily Fran Duffy from the Eagles, at FDuffy3 on Twitter, scouting video guru. I'm merely a former NFL offensive lineman, at Ross Tucker NFL on Twitter. Hopefully you guys are already following the podcast at RTF Podcast Twitter handle, or you're a Facebook person. That's cool. We appreciate those thumbs up, the likes at facebook.com/RossTuckerNFL. We are going to look at some of the top positions and discuss how to evaluate some of those positions each and every week before we get to our conference previews. Want to at least get to a couple of the hot positions with some special guests, and we'll start today with Greg McElroy and the quarterback position.
Best available interview.
As promised, we are joined by a former national championship quarterback who played in the NFL for a while as well for the Jets and the Bengals. We're talking quarterbacks, so why not get a guy that did it at a very high level, both in college and the NFL, and by the way, watches and covers all these college quarterbacks all the time, in Greg McElroy. Greg, it's Ross Tucker, Fran Duffy here on the College Draft Podcast. Really, really appreciate your time. And I guess I'll just start, Greg. People ask me this all the time, so I'm going to ask you this. What is the thing, since based on your time in the NFL, that people don't put enough stock in when talking about quarterbacks and the success or failure that they have in the NFL? What's the thing that we don't spend enough time on in your mind?
Well, it's good to be with you guys. To me, it's how much does he love the game? That's really probably the first question I would ask a potential pro, because it goes from being something that you do part-time to something that becomes your full-time job. And it's not a job, guys, and you understand this, that lasts 17 regular season weeks. It's not even a job that lasts from the end of July when training camp starts to hopefully the beginning of February when the Super Bowl is played. It's a job that requires all the time in between, all the preparation in between. And I think that you really have to love playing the quarterback position. You have to almost be psychotic in your preparation. Some of the guys that are best at the position are genuinely, they have a little bit of a screw loose, guys. I mean, let's just be honest. From a competitive standpoint, some of the great stories that you hear, I mean, Peyton and Eli competing against each other nonstop growing up. Drew Brees, there's epic stories about his level of competition. For instance, he took his entire offense out on a fishing trip, and they are all got in their own boats. They all went out, and Drew Brees stayed out an hour and a half longer than anyone else in order to guarantee that he had the most fish upon arrival. I mean, you just have to be a little crazy, and you have to hate to lose. And it can't just be, you know, you love what the position gives you. You can't just love what football provides you. You have to love the game itself. So many guys, they love the fame and fortune and all the other extracurricular benefits of playing the quarterback position, but do they really love the game? Do they love the preparation? I think that's the question that I try to figure out most. And I don't think it's always very easy to pinpoint, too. So many guys in the draft process, of course, they're all over it. They're trying to sell themselves and get picked as high as possible. But I think it's tough sometimes to read the tea leaves to get a genuine gauge on what a guy's passion level is for playing the sport and the position itself.
Greg, it's Fran Duffy here. I'm really glad you mentioned that, because not only a quarterback too, but I think of positions across the game. You think of who the best of the best are, whether it's Richard Sherman and J.J. Watt and Luke Kuechly and Joe Thomas and, you know, all these guys, all the guys that are considered the best of the best at their position for years and years at a time, all seem to share that kind of relentless pursuit of perfection and to be the best, and absolutely is the case at quarterback. So let me ask you now, for on the field, do you kind of have a couple of traits, you know, maybe two or three traits on field that you feel are most important when watching these college guys and projecting them that really translate best to the NFL?
Well, accuracy is first and foremost. And, I mean, if you can't hit the same spot 10 out of 10 from 15 yards away, it's going to be very difficult for you to have immense amount of success in the NFL. And accuracy in college is different than accuracy in the NFL. In college, it's hit a guy in stride, right? And wherever it is on his body, just hit him in stride. That's good. If it's on his chest, that's fine. If it's on his face mask, that's good. If it's 1 foot in front of the numbers, then that's great. In the NFL, it's hit him in the face mask every time. And unless you're throwing a slant or an in-breaking route where you're running away from defender, in which case you might want to body the guy up and throw the ball on his body. I mean, literally, the margin for error in the NFL is so much higher than that, and the coverage is so much tighter, and the windows are so much smaller in the NFL than they are at the college level. So I think accuracy first and foremost, that's what I want to see, especially on throws that are over 10, 15, and in some cases 20 yards. It has to be pinpoint accuracy, and if you don't display that at the college level, it's only going to get tougher in the NFL when the margin for error and the recovery of the defender is just so much more amplified. So accuracy would be one. Two would be toughness. I know that quarterbacks, of course, growing up, we all took our fair share of heat being the pretty boys and wearing the colored jersey in practice and not getting hit. But I tell you what, when a quarterback gets hit, it's not often pretty. And you have to be able to get up and be completely unaffected and make sure that your teammates understand that you're willing to play the next play as hard as you did the last play, even though you might be breathing through your nose because you got the wind knocked out of you. I mean, some of the quarterback hits are pretty violent. So you have to be extremely, extremely tough. And now in today's day and age in the NFL, I think you have to have a certain level of athleticism. And it's not necessarily, you don't have to run a 4.5 40 to be successful. Tom Brady is incredible from a mobility standpoint. Now, he's not going to hurt you on the ground, but the way he navigates throughout the pocket, moving side to side, moving up in the pocket, I think you have a certain level of mobility and pocket awareness. So those would be the three traits I think that translate best, just because over the course of the season, the toughness aspect would be the one that most people would contest. But over the course of a 16-game regular season, when you're playing against superhuman players on the opposite side and some of the best athletes in the world are trying to hit you as hard as humanly possible, you have to be able to bounce back up. The accuracy should be relatively obvious, and the pocket mobility, being able to throw in a congested pocket, navigate through those lanes within the pocket, and then escape and get positive yardage when necessary. Those would be the three things that I'd probably value as much, if not more than anything else.
Ross, before we toss back to you, I wanted to ask a quick follow-up, Greg. So when you look at accuracy and you look at that as being an issue for a quarterback at the college level, and we've seen that with guys that were big names or guys that were maybe seen as developmental players. Oh, well, you know, let's see if he can get more accurate once he gets to the NFL. Do you feel like that's something that can be fixable from college to the NFL? Or do you feel like if a guy shows it at the college level where he's just too erratic, his ball placement is just completely off base, that is going to graduate with him to the next level?
Well, I'd want to look at the rest of his mechanics, because I think accuracy comes as much from the hand as it does from your feet. So if I'm watching a guy who has perfect footwork at the college level and is coming from a pro-style system and the ball is still not necessarily in a place where it needs to be, then I have my concerns. But if a guy's coming from a spread offense and his feet are erratic and the accuracy isn't necessarily top shelf, I can overlook it a little bit. With accuracy comes anticipation, too. And I think anticipation goes hand in hand with arm strength. If you have great anticipation, you can overcome a certain lack of arm strength. But if you don't have great anticipation, then you better be able to fit it in a spot that is 4 inches by 4 inches. And that's not very easy to do for a lot of guys as they transition. So I do think accuracy can be improved, but it would in large part have to do with what style of offense he's coming from at the college level, what type of windows he's throwing into in the college level, how much pressure and duress he's under, and what his footwork looks like. Because there's so many guys that have erratic footwork but still are able to overcome that erratic footwork and showcase incredible accuracy. Like this most recent draft class, Pat Mahomes, his footwork is all over the place. It's a disaster at times, literally a disaster. But he still finds a way to put the ball in a spot that is NFL-level accuracy. And that's something to be that I think his accuracy is only going to get better. As he hones in his feet and gets comfortable within the offense they're running at Kansas City, that accuracy number is only going to improve. So I think it really has to do with the individual. There are some guys that have it all working and it's all in unison and their body looks great and their arms in a consistent slot and the ball just isn't where it needs to be. Those are the guys that I get real concerned about. But with some of the offenses you're seeing at the college level right now, with the footwork just being such a disaster, for lack of a better word, then I can sometimes overlook a little bit of the inconsistencies accuracy-wise at the college level.
I'm going to piggyback off of that, Greg, because one thing I've wondered is, you know, you hear so much about arm strength and arm talent, but then it does seem like there are some guys that while they're in the NFL, I think Brady, Aaron Rodgers, it seems like that their arms got better, you know, while they were in the NFL. And there's other guys as well. How important is arm strength? How much can that be improved?
Well, I actually think it can be. My arm got considerably stronger in the NFL. But I think it's in large part due to the fact that my body just got stronger. I mean, as you get a little bit older, you get a little bit stronger, you get a little bit more mature. From 21 to 28, it's a significant difference. And that's when a lot of the guys are entering into the league now, especially the top-tier prospects that are going in the first few rounds. So I do think that it can absolutely improve. If you're a guy like Aaron Rodgers, you're just a freak. I mean, Aaron Rodgers is as gifted a player as we've seen at the quarterback position ever from a skill set standpoint. His flexibility, the way he can shift his shoulders, the way he rolls to the left and can still throw back to the right with the amount of pop he's able to get on it. I'll never forget the third down throw he made against the Cowboys. That was just the most ridiculous throw I've ever seen to convert that third down and eventually seal the victory. And he does things like that on pretty much all the time. But you see how much he generates his legs into it. He also, at the college level, he had his ball slot real high. I mean, right underneath his right ear, which is what Jeff Tedford taught there at Cal. And it was very mechanical. And now he's become a little bit more athletic and a little bit more relaxed before he releases the football. And the pop is just ridiculous. When the ball comes out of his hands, I think he's got the strongest arm in the league. It's something else. Brady, on the other hand, is just a tactician. He's worked with Tom House out in SC, obviously, and has kind of refined his motion, and it's become really as good as it can get. The length that he gets on the arm, his length in general, it being 6'5", and I know he's listed at 6'4", Tom Brady's 6'5", and change. He's a big boy. And he's got so much strength in the lower half. And I think your arm can get considerably better. I really do. There's some guys that just have gifted skill set and can throw the ball a country mile regardless of their age and how big and how strong and how whippy they are. But there's other guys that really have to work and refine their craft, and Tom Brady's one of those. Now you get the real nice short stride with his left foot. Never strides more than 6 inches, regardless of how far or what type of throw he's trying to make. His arm gets real elongated at the top, so he creates that natural lag. I mean, he has, and I'm talking like a golf evaluator here, but I mean, Tom Brady, if you look at his stroke and you're a young kid trying to learn the position, that's what I try to emulate. Just how consistent it is, how consistent his left arm is through it, how consistent his left stride is, and how much he's able to transfer that weight. And then you have other guys like Tony Romo that naturally don't have a ridiculous rifle, but he actually, as he was getting ready to throw the football, he would close that left shoulder just ever so slightly, almost like a golf swing if you can visualize it. He would close that left shoulder like he was winding up, and then release it to get the extra pop on the ball necessary. And that's something he had to work on coming out of school because he has a little bit of an unnatural sidearm release. So it's definitely things that can be worked on and to improve your arm angle. But usually when you're a guy and you've done this 100 million times and you've dropped back 1,000 times and thrown the ball 1,000,000 times, you kind of are who you are. You've seen guys try to change their release. Like Tim Tebow is a good example of that. Try to change his release at the Senior Bowl, then try to retool his release in the off seasons. When the bullets start flying on game day, you revert back to who you were. And that's, I think, very difficult. That's why it's really special to watch a guy like Tom Brady, who's kind of adjusted the way he does things and has really refined the way he did it. And when bullets are flying, he keeps the exact same fundamentals he worked on all throughout the offseason.
Greg, I'm glad you mentioned Tebow, because my last question for you relates to, you know, mental processing, decision making. You know, I think you could argue that's the most important thing. And I know what you said about guys have to love it and put the time in. I guess my question, though, is like, how much is it just the fact that guys like Breeze and Luck and Brady, you know, just have a natural inclination to be able to process information quickly? And then how much of it on top of that is the work that they put in? Because all we ever heard about was how hard Tim Tebow works. And I think you might have been his teammate in New York, I don't remember. But all we ever heard about was how hard he works. Yet you'd watch and his decision making still stunk. So I guess my question is, how much of it is just you're a naturally football IQ or a smart individual versus, you know, you can improve in that area by the amount of time you put in?
Well, I think a lot of it, too, has to understand. I mean, Tom Brady and Drew Brees, and those guys have seen 1,000,000 coverages. You know, I mean, they've seen it all, done it all, had an answer for everything. So they always had tools up their sleeve to be able to get out of negative plays. Tom Brady, almost every play the Patriots run, I think it has at least some type of check with me option, whether it be run to pass or man to zone or however they want to diagnose it. I mean, they have a motion built in, and usually whatever happens with that motion guy, if a guy's running with him that's man, then they're going to run their man play. If he stays on one side, then they're going to run their zone play. So they do a lot of cross ball motion, and you know, you get 1,000,000 reps, you get better and better at it, and you're able to diagnose a little bit easier. I don't think, I mean, I know we take the Wunderlich test and we put stock into that. I don't know how much it really matters, and that's supposed to be a real gauge as to whether or not you can process information. I think making adjustments too, you know, over the course of the game day. But I think so many of these guys, they already know what's coming before it comes, and that goes into the weekly preparation. And yeah, Tim was a hard worker, no doubt. I mean, we all work our tail off, but there's a whole different thing to seeing it on tape. And Ross, you understand this. I mean, seeing it on tape from an all 22 view is a heck of a lot easier than seeing it on the field in a span of 3 seconds to be able to figure out what's coming at you and diagnosing and compartmentalizing all the tells the defense has in order to know that what pressure or what coverage is coming. So I think a lot of it has to do too with having a certain memory to where you never forget things. There's amazing stories about Peyton Manning. Like year 16 in the NFL, he's with the Broncos in his first season. And Adam Gase was the offensive coordinator. And he said to Adam, he said, you know what would be great against this look right here? We ran a play back in 1997 when I was at Tennessee. I was a junior. And I think it would just get him here. So he called up the Tennessee office, got that play clipped off, sent to Denver, and they installed it the next day and used it on Sunday when they teed it up. You have to have kind of a photographic memory, and not as many people have memory like Peyton. I mean, he's on another level and obviously could become a coordinator in 2 seconds if he wanted to, and probably win a Super Bowl as a coordinator because he understands and sees and remembers so much. But I think that the guys like that are rare, and that's why Peyton was, according to some, the greatest of all time. And I think that it'd be tough to shoot holes in that logic given the way he changed the position. So I think that there's some truth to what you're saying in regards to work ethic, but I also think that there's some uncanny ability that you have to recognize too in a player as to whether or not he can remember and truly make adjustments on the fly.
Greg, my last question for you is really going the opposite direction. You talked about the traits that you need to see that are most important. Is there something when you're watching these quarterbacks in college that are considered, you know, draftable players, and not necessarily the bottom of the barrel, but the guys that are considered, you know, mid-round prospects or above, where maybe they show a trait that is kind of like a red line for you, a huge red flag that you just, you can't cross that line. You can't fully buy into this guy as being a successful starter because he shows, you know, this trait in college. Is there something like that for you when you're watching these players and projecting them to the NFL?
There's a couple things that I look at. One, if a guy takes unnecessary chances with the football, and we saw that a little bit from Deshaun Watson last year. I think he's incredible. I think he's a really good player. But the fact that he had 17 interceptions as a senior, that makes me a little anxious. I want a guy to be a gunslinger for sure. I absolutely want him to take chances and have faith in his arm and have faith in the offense and his receiver to get to the spot that he's trying to throw it to. But I think that if you take unnecessary chances and make careless decisions with the football, I think that's a hard thing to unlearn as you transition and the game gets a little faster and the players get a little better. So I think that's one. A guy that takes a lot of sacks worries me too. It makes me wonder as to, and I took a lot of sacks, so I can say that, you know, knowing that was something that really held me back. A guy that takes a lot of sacks makes me feel as though he doesn't necessarily always have a plan if things are going haywire up front, or if a guy misses a block and you got to lose it, or he doesn't have a good understanding of protection, when he's taken care of, when he's not, or he just doesn't really have that internal clock that goes off knowing that it's time to get rid of the football. So if a guy takes a lot of sacks and if a guy makes unnecessary choices to be dangerous with the football, those are two things that worry me some, because I think just those things are hard to unlearn, because you're trying to be a player, you're trying to make plays, sure, but on being unnecessary plays, and there's a lot more games that are lost than won at the college level and even in the pros in some cases. So I do think that those are two traits that really kind of worry me when I'm evaluating prospects, and that's kind of what I'm a little worried about with Josh Allen from Wyoming. Because he makes the spectacular play several different occasions throughout the game, but he makes some very dangerous, careless decisions with the football from time to time. He had 15 interceptions last year. I hope that number goes down, because I like him a lot and think he has a real chance to be a top five pick in this upcoming draft alongside Darnold. They'll all be jockeying and Rosen to be the number one overall quarterback next year. But I think he's got to make sure that he takes the next step in regards to his decision making and not putting his team in a difficult spot by making a poor decision.
Greg, you are the man. Really appreciate the time. Terrific insight from a national championship college quarterback who also spent a bunch of years in the NFL with a couple different organizations. Great to get your insight. Thanks so much.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate you having me.
That was awesome, Fran, and a perfect transition for Greg mentioning Josh Allen, so we can get a little Daddy Soda time on the three most hyped quarterbacks. Hit the Daddy Soda thing, Bri.
Daddy Sodas.
Yeah. Well, why don't we start with Josh Allen, Fran, since that's the guy that Greg mentioned. We'll get to Josh Allen, Sam Darnold, and Josh Rosen, the three guys that everybody says are at the top. And I know you haven't watched as much tape on these guys as you want, but you've obviously seen some. So why don't you pick up where he left off talking about Josh Allen, the strapping kid out of Wyoming.
Yeah, Allen is so intriguing, man. And he mentioned the 15 interceptions, so I'll start there. And I actually charted all 15 interceptions from last year, and seven of those picks, Ross, came either from late throws or forced throws. You know, and you really – He mentioned you just got to cut some of those bad decisions out. Like I so many times I saw where he was running to his right and he would throw late into the middle of the field, or, you know, the ball would just come out late on an outbreaking route. Some of them were picked, some of them weren't. You just got to cut some of those decisions out. But, you know, on the other side of the coin, you're talking about a player who's got NFL size, 6'5". He was listed 222. He's got a frame to add even more weight on. He's got that athletic ability, the ability to make plays both inside and outside of the pocket and hurt defenses with his arm or with his legs. But more importantly, this kid's arm talent, I mean, the ball explodes out of his hand. He made some throws last year that were just bananas on tape. I mean, from 55, 60 yards out on a rope, pinpoint accuracy to the back pylon on the run. I mean, some of the throws he made were just ridiculous. But more importantly, he's coming from a pro-style system. You know, he's lined up under center and in the gun. He comes from the same coaching staff that helped bring up Carson Wentz early in his career. The offensive coordinator there, Brent Veagen, was there in North Dakota State with Carson Wentz. And so he comes from that same cloth. A drop-back passer. He's got experience turning his back to the defense and play-action game. He's got clean feet from under center. He's tough to bring down. I mentioned the NFL size. His accuracy, I would say, is pretty good. I'd like to see the touch improve a little bit, and there are some things with his mechanics you'd like to tweak. But overall, I mean, this kid is a great prospect. I would say probably a step below Sam Darnold, but to me, I'm really excited about his upside. I'm really glad that he decided to go back to school because, like a Mitch Trubisky and some of the other guys that we talked about from this past class in 2017, he's only a one-year starter. You know, so there's a small sample size. So I'm really excited to watch him potentially develop and get better at some of those things that we saw back last fall. I'm really excited about Josh Allen and what he can bring to the table.
You mentioned Darnold. You said Allen's probably a step behind. Talk to me about Darnold.
Yeah, Darnold's, you know, he's 6'4", 225, so he's even built a little bit thicker than Josh Allen. Again, only started a handful of games for the Trojans, so you have this small sample size, but I really liked what I saw last year from this kid when I went back and studied him. He's got the accuracy you want. He's got enough arm strength to be a quality starter. His arm isn't as strong as a Josh Allen, but I feel good about his ability to get a little bit stronger at the next level. He's a competitive kid. He came up big in tight moments. He played well on third down. He shows better touch than Josh Allen. Got the ability to make those bucket throws in all areas of the field. I liked his accuracy, both from the pocket in a static position as well as on the run. What really stood out to me, though, about Darnold was how quickly he was able to eliminate, and I think he'll get even a little bit better there. But then also his ability to evade rushers in tight spaces. You know, Greg talked about the ability to operate in a congested pocket. Sam Darnold showed that and also showed the ability to throw with anticipation, which for a kid who was 19 years old last year, coming in and throwing with the level of anticipation that he did, I thought that that made up for a lot of people are killing Darnold for his delivery, you know, his upper body mechanics. I've seen a lot of quarterbacks over the last few years, not just guys that turned out great, not just guys that failed, but even going back into the archives, guys that were, you know, Hall of Fame quarterbacks, that maybe the ball didn't always look pretty when he was, you know, winding up and delivering the football. But when you look at Sam Darnold, to me, I think that his anticipation, his accuracy, I think it almost makes up for the fact that maybe the ball comes out a split second late because of a little bit of a slower delivery. I still like his quick arm action. I think he's got the ability to be a quality starting quarterback for a lot of the traits that we talked about, his ability to mentally process things in a quick fashion, his ability to operate in a muddy pocket. I like his accuracy and his touch, his poise. I'm a big fan of Sam Darnold. To me, he's the top quarterback in this class, and I'm excited to see him get even better this year, even though they do lose a lot of different weapons there. They lose one of their running backs. They lost a lot of pieces on the offensive line. So excited to see how Sam Darnold looks this year with a very much a new look Trojans offense.
So then let's get to last but not least Josh Rosen, who after his true freshman year was really considered the guy in that class.
Yeah, I mentioned the lack of continuity this year for Sam Darnold. Well, Josh Rosen's going to be going on his third offensive coordinator in 3 years, which is never easy for a college quarterback. And so you're talking about if he were to come out, he'd play in five different systems in 5 years going back to high school. And it's just it's tough. You want to see a guy try and settle into the scheme. Last year, they played for Kennedy Polamalu. It was a pro-style scheme, so you got to see him line up under center and in the gun. He's got experience working in play action and turning his back to the defense. And you know what? Of all these guys, and really more so just go looking back at this past class as well in 2017, Josh Rosen is really clean. He is as clean as any quarterback I've seen in the last couple of years. His feet look really good. His eyes are always up. He's got two hands on the football as he's navigating a pocket. To me, he's got that look of a starting quarterback in the NFL. I think he's got a solid arm. I think he's pretty accurate. A lot of people will point to his completion percentage numbers and things like that and say, oh, he's erratic. Ross, he had possibly one of the worst supporting casts that I've studied in the last couple of years. There were so many drops from that receiving core last year. I mean, it was almost laughable. The offensive line didn't do him any favors either. I mean, there was a lot of issues on that UCLA offense last year. But when you look at Josh Rosen physically, I think everything's there. I think he processes things pretty quickly. The big issues that you're going to worry about with Josh Rosen, number one, he's going to be coming off another shoulder injury, and he missed, I think he only played six games last year, did come back for the start of spring practice in March, but you worry about the shoulder, and it is his throwing shoulder, so how is he going to look coming off of that? And then there are all the rumors, all the reports about what he's like off the field, and that stuff has already started with him, so that's going to need to be checked out. And we've seen how questions about leadership and how much his teammates like him, how that affected a player like a Connor Cook in the draft a couple years ago, and he fell to the fourth round. A lot of people thought he would be in the first or second round consideration. Is that going to be something that happens with Rosen, or are those whispers going to die down as we go into his junior year? I think that will be big for him. But physically, I mean, Josh Rosen has the tools to be a starting quarterback. There's no question in my mind. It was really refreshing going back. I've studied seven quarterbacks so far from this class. Just seeing the quality of player, the quality of prospect that we're seeing this year, just compared to last year, it's pretty refreshing because all three of these guys can play. I'm a big fan of all three players.
I love it, just like I love catching Fran on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast every week, talking about the game of football from the All-22. You can also catch all of our other podcasts over at RossTucker.com, the Fantasy Feast, Even Money, and, of course, the unbelievably cleverly named Ross Tucker Football Podcast. We're going to keep this going. We'll be joined by another special guest next week to break down another position and find out from an expert exactly the right way, the best way to evaluate that position, things that are overrated, things that are underrated, and we'll take a peek at a couple of the key guys at that position as well. Other than that, the keg is kicked. We are all tapped out.
Thanks for enjoying your Frosty One while listening to the College Draft.
Chug, 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 chug.
Make sure you're also subscribing to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Fantasy Feast, and Even Money Podcasts, all available on iTunes at rostucker.com or wherever podcasts can be found.